It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Your independence of me, Ernest Hancock, broadcasting on Liberty News Radio around the country from Phoenix, Arizona, in the studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com, where you'll start seeing some of the articles and columns from Kay Beach. I met Kay when I was in Pennsylvania at the Liberty Forum that was done by Tom DeWeese there, and I met Kay, and she just really had a lot of information that I wanted to share with you. She's a full-time freedom activist, all right? Now, she's associated with the Constitutional Alliance, and they want to make sure that you get the kind of government that was the promise. You know, and we can go on and on about how I think you're going to have a government with the power of, and they're going to promise anything other than they get what they want. But she's really hyped up about the fear of terrorism, the technological advancements, and taking all your personal goodies and doing bad things with it. I got you there, Kay?
I'm here.
Now, let's go ahead and give out your address or your blog. It's axiomforliberty.com. That's AXIOMFOR Liberty.com. AXIOMFOR Liberty.com. And the question you ask is, well, how free do you want to be? I want to be really free. How free do you want to be?
I want to be totally free. And I want to be free from surveillance and all of the psychological control that goes along with it, which is an aspect of it I think that people miss. And I think it's actually the most powerful aspect of it.
Well, let's go ahead. I mean, if we look at, you know, the top of Freedom's Phoenix, we have a story I just put up this morning. Then I saw that another individual had already put it up, you know, so they took mine down. And it was about Homeland Security doing retina scans. They're testing it. Homeland Security to test iris scanners. And this is, you know, Homeland Security will test cameras that take photos from 3 or 4 feet away. You know, it's just like you're walking by, and it's like Minority Report with Tom Cruise, that movie. You're walking around, bleep, 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 and they're tracking everybody. And I remember you saying something that really had, a matter of fact, Wednesday we have the gentleman on, and he wrote, let's look at it, it's Mark Lerner. And his whole thing is your body is your ID. So explain that to people, what you mean by that.
Well, with biometrics, especially, I mean, we're familiar with fingerprints. And some of us may have been a little perturbed when we went to the DMV and they wanted our fingerprints because that's traditionally used to, you know, for criminals, for people who have broken the law or suspected of doing so. And the thing is, there's been a big move, and you may have noticed with the, I put an article up about they want to scan your bones, facial recognition, all of these things, iris. What do they have all in common is that they can be done from a distance without your knowledge, without your permission or consent. And why?
Because they can. Because they can.
Yeah, because they want to keep up with us. I mean, one thing that people miss is that your identity is only as good as the persona that is attached to. So in other words, how do they know it's you if they scan your iris or your face? Well, they go and match it up in a database. And how do they know it's you because of that information in the database is because when you went to the DMV or applied for a passport or some other government agency, they looked at those breeder documents. That would be your birth certificate or similar. And that is where the security needs to be, and that's something that Mark covers in his book. And it also is probably, I highly recommend people in Arizona and everywhere actually read it, because there's a simple solution for verifying identity and citizenship that doesn't require us shoveling all of our information to DHS. People fail to ask that question. Everybody wants to stop illegal immigration. Everybody wants to stop, terrorism. But they don't ask themselves, do we have to shovel all of this information to DHS? And with the way the databases are being connected now, it's all of your information. It's from your public schools. It's from private sources. It's from Choice Point. Every agency, that's the whole idea behind Fusion, is to fuse that information together. They're trying to break down stovepipes, and stovepipes are what we used to think of as on a need-to-know basis. In other words, your bank is separate, your doctor's separate, all of these things are separate, and they're only shared on a need-to-know basis. That's the old paradigm. We have a new paradigm now, which is wants everyone to share information, send it to DHS, where it goes to Interpol, and combine all that data. The whole purpose is they want to hash and parse that data, apply an algorithm, and see if they can discern if you're going to be more of a threat to the government.
It's
not for our security.
This happened. It started certainly in England. That's why 1984 takes place in England, V for Vendetta. It's always been this, the Queen owns everything and you, and that's just the way it is. Get used to it. That's what monarchy is all about. And that's one thing a lot of people don't know is when they have elections and they select a prime minister, he goes to the Queen and asks permission to be set. Now, a lot of people don't know this. The Queen says, I give you permission. Now, they think you got to go ask permission of the monarchy. Welcome to, the monarchy. What do you think was going on? They just let you. It's the illusion of choice. And so in England, you start looking. This is where the photo radar started coming in. Here come the cameras. But then they started fighting back. And, probably 5-6 years ago before it started becoming a big thing here in the U.S., they were putting tires around them, you stack 2, 3, 4 tires, light them on fire and burn the crap out of these cameras. But they have, it was something stupid. It's 1 to 4 million closed circuit cameras in London. I'm going, what the heck? How could they even, what is it they're trying to accomplish? Well, everything. They want to know everything. Why? What is the
because
purpose of government?
They own you. They think that they're in charge of you. And it's funny that you mentioned the UK, because a lot of this fusion center, this domestic intelligence, is imported from the UK. It's known as intelligence-led policing. There's a problem with intelligence-led policing in the United States. It's based on, people call it different things. You might know international law, communitarian law. Which is contrary to our system of government, or at least the ones that we think we have. It's completely contrary. It makes you guilty till proven innocent, for instance. And so when they talk about this new paradigm of policing, that's what they're talking about, intelligence-led policing. You may remember, back in the 90s with the COPS, community-oriented policing, or communist-oriented policing, as some people call it, it had to do with really expanding the role of police officers and getting them into the community so that people could be their eyes and ears. It's almost Stasi-like or Stasi-like.
Well, this is how I remember it. I remember it was the Clinton administration, and they have what they called multi-jurisdictional task forces. And this was the beginning of the concept that you would have local law enforcement becoming agents of the federal government. They were federalized. They give them token little desk over there or something, but that had nothing to do with it. They just wanted to be able to share all data of all level of government in the name of law enforcement or preventative crime or, prior restraint and all this other stuff. And people freaked out about this power grab of the federal government and local law enforcement. Well, then later it became the same people were screaming for that very thing after 9/11 because they wanted to have this homeland security and they wanted to be able to go get bad guys and they wanted to have all of the, in the name of immigration. Well, now they have it. It's called fusion centers. And we had some young activists going around the country. One of them, Catherine Bly, she came by here and we hooked her up and got a meeting and a videotape interview with some representatives of the Fusion Center here in Arizona, and she'd been doing around the country. And they called their project Defuse. And the point that they were making was after the MIAC report out of Missouri, where they were going, hey man, if you got a Ron Paul bumper sticker, you know, you're justified in stopping them for that. And we're going, oh, are you kidding me? So that became a big deal. And what they started to find out was this wasn't just there. It was nationwide. They wanted to create any kind of justification for them stopping you. Well, now they have SB 1070 here, immigration. Immigration is the issue that they are using. If we don't have a database on everyone, how are we going to know if you're here legally or not if we don't check the papers and the iris scan and the bone scan and the smell scan and the DNA scan of everybody to see if you're supposed to be here when we compare it to our, a database? Oh, we're going to talk about it more with Kay Beach when we come back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, in just a little bit. We'll be right back.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
What's wrong with the world, mama? People living like they ain't got no mama. I think the whole world addicted to the drama. Only attracted to things that'll bring the trauma. Overseas, yeah, we trying to stop terrorism. But we still got terrorists here living in the USA, the big CIA. The Bloods and the Crips and the KKK. But if you only have love for your own race, then you only leave space to discriminate. And to discriminate only generates hate. And when you hate, then you're bound to get irate. Yeah, madness is what you demonstrate. And that's exactly how anger works and operates. Man, you gotta have love just to set it straight. Take control of your mind and meditate. Let your soul gravitate to the love, y'all, y'all.
Yeah, people killing, people dying. And I got a question. Need some guidance. Where's the love? That's what I want to know. Where is the love? Well, we got to see it in the last few years. Love-lution. An entire generation of people that didn't want to rule anybody. They just didn't want to be ruled. And that has been the difference of 22 years of me doing this, being able to come to be live long enough to witness and experience that finally people were asking the right questions. Not how can I get in charge to rule people the way I want. They're just like, hey, man, I just don't want to be ruled anymore. And there's enough evidence out there saying, oh, man, there's a whole bunch of we want to rule you going on in the form of surveillance, data creation, data manipulation, pre-crime kind of. You know what? When they used to say, you know, that'll go on your permanent record. You know, we knew that was all crap. Well, now it's not. You're 7 years old. Heck, you're born. You got a permanent record starting to be kept on you. Certainly with Obamacare coming, yeah, it's already being done. There is a, you know, you don't think so? Watch what happens to all the things that you've done on Facebook. What did Google say? They said, you know, these young people, they're going to have to change their names. They get older. There's nothing they didn't put on there that didn't archive somewhere. So now there's going to be lessons learned, and future generations are going to know this, I hope. But they went in innocent, thinking, yeah, you know, nobody cares what I, until they do. So now we're looking, there's been a lot of other things too that I want Kay and I to talk about. We'll get into Oklahoma City thing at the bottom of the hour and we'll go into that. But, you know, your research, Kay, started from what? What got you involved in this to begin with?
You know, well, the internet, I always say the internet made me because I'm an information hound. I just always, I listen to your show and I hear you always say, why? And that's me. Why? Which was really annoying for people in my regular life before I started doing this. And it's a great asset now. So I started finding out about, property seizure for the war on drugs, for all of these things. And I was appalled and I was following these stories. I can remember I think it's the November Coalition. Carried a lot of stories about that. And then what taught me about the true nature of government, I have to credit a little Medicaid scam down in Texas called TMAPS, Texas Medical Algorithm Project, that ended up with two-thirds of Texas's foster children on major psychotropic medications like the new atypical antipsychotics. And it was a scam cooked up between then Governor Bush and about 18 major pharmaceutical companies. And they basically created an algorithm. It was based on falsified studies. The lawsuits still are pouring out about these major pharmaceutical companies like Eli Lilly and some of those. But that was so successful that they turned it into the president's new Freedom Commission on Mental Health. And what I realized from reading all of this, and I went into my own public schools and I was appalled when I looked at their programs. Some people might know it as teen screen, but it's these mental health screenings. So with the new Freedoms Commission report in 2005, I believe it was, they decided that they would screen every man, woman, and child, starting with the school kids, for mental illness. And what they do is they get a Rolodex together so that they can refer your child to a psychiatrist. And I just realized that this government is not something that you trust. It's not a person that you build trust with, even though the individual people may not be bad people. It's an entity, and it will eat your children. There's nothing to trust there. And so that's what woke me up to the nature of government. And surveillance has always been a big issue for me because I experienced a time in my life where I was under constant scrutiny with the threat of reprisals at any time, and the rules weren't quite clear. And what I know from experiencing that is that when you are in such a situation, and everybody has been, whether it be for 5 minutes or 5 years, think of a time when you're in public and you feel that scrutiny on you. Are you being? Can you be? Are you connected with yourself, with your maker, or any of these things? No. And you look at a country like Singapore. If you remember the total information awareness thing that Poindexter put out, and it got shot down by Congress in 2003, well, of course, they kept it going, and they brought it back and changed the name. But they took a lot of that on the road to Singapore. And Singapore is an interesting country to study. It's very small and easily controlled, but what people notice when they go there is it's very clean, it's very efficient, and people are scared to death of offending the government. They have some repressive laws, and when they catch you on something, it's bad. But that's infrequent. They don't like to show their power. The way that this works is the same principle, if you're familiar with the concept of the Panopticon. This was a prison designed in late 1800s by Jeremy Bentham. He was a utilitarian philosopher. And he designed this prison called the Panopticon. It had a central tower for the jailers and a circular building around it divided into cells. But the whole point of it was the guards could see into the cells without the prisoners being able to see the guards. So this central tower, they had Venetian blinds. Now the technology allows that we can be seen without knowing when we're being seen. So what happens is you internalize this surveillance and you police yourself, and that's what's happening in Singapore. They're psychologically controlled. And it's hard to even discern it, but one of the principles of the Panopticon was that power should be visible and unverifiable. So in other words, all of these cameras in the UK, how many of them are actually on? We've had situations recently in the airport where two of the cameras weren't functioning. If you see the camera, understand the only reason that you see it is because they want you to see it. That's part of how it works, because there is no reason. There are plenty of cameras that are too tiny to be seen. So if they got a place bristling with cameras, that is a psychological aspect of it, and it is the most powerful aspect of it. The Panopticon, and this is a quote from Bentham, he said it was a new mode of obtaining power of mind over mind in a quantity hitherto without example. And that's exactly how it works, and it's soul-killing.
So you're saying, you know, in addition to all the capacity that they have, it's just having the capacity on display as part of the mind game that they're doing on us just to, what, get used to it?
Well, that's how it works psychologically, is that you know. I mean, think of it like this. Is there any place in your life right now, whether it be at home or any aspect of your life, that you can say for sure that you couldn't be observed or you couldn't be monitored or they're not watching what you do, for instance, your banking, or even in your home with the technology that they have? There's really not. Now, of course, we think, well, chances are I'm not interesting enough that they're observing me. But the fact that they can creates a self-censorship. If you remember the first time after you heard the NSA is listening to all our phone calls, maybe you're on the phone ranting about the government or something, and you thought, could they be listening to me? And you probably didn't think about it too many times after that. And that is because that censorship is internalized. And you are literally censoring yourself and shutting off thoughts, not expressing thoughts, without even realizing you're doing it. And when you don't verbalize or express a thought, that is shutting down your brain. It makes you dumb. It constricts your world. It constricts your view. So, yeah, a lot of this surveillance. In fact, I remember a lot of the stories coming out about 205 with all this fantastic surveillance and capabilities that I thought, I don't know if I believe all that.
You know, this is a good line. You know, I want to continue this. Remember where you were just at, because I'm interested in this. A lot of times, if you can get people thinking a certain way or afraid, and that's one way I'm going, we're not afraid, because fear is the mind killer, and they know it, and they're using it. They, them, those. There are those who just want to be left alone, and there are those that just won't leave them alone. Who are they? We'll find out when we come back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Let's get ready to...
I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
Yeah, I leave you the choice, because I don't know, who else do I leave the choice to? You know, this has been going on for, it's been the theme of books and movies and campaigns and stuff forever. And I'll tell you, no matter who you vote for, in the end, the government always wins. And this whole concept that not only do they own eventually the land that you walk upon and eminent domain, it's all the king's, you know, they can tax anybody for anything, they can regulate commerce, and now they want all of your data. Well, in addition to that, the one concept that you brought up that I really, really hit with me, Kay, was no longer that, you know, national ID is not a card that you have. You know, it's the database. It's them being able to link to you. Your card is your freaking body, your face. I mean, just walking around, you're already IDing yourself. So it's this mentality that they have. And this started a long time ago from the beginning. It was all about, did they have the technology to be able to do it? And I'm this last weekend, I put up these IBM commercials. They were playing in the U.S. Open, and it has a little baby laying there emitting all this data, and we got you from the beginning. And I'm going, yeah, isn't that like what IBM did in Nazi Germany? I'm going, okay, nothing's changed except the ability to do it. And I'm going, okay. So you start coming across all this information. It sends you on a direction. But the one thing I wanted to focus on this half hour, and of course, let you finish whatever thought you had from the last half hour, but I wanted to get into your advocacy of finding the truth on Oklahoma City bombing. That was kind of our 9/11 without the internet and the form that it is now. But we were heavily involved on email and sharing information even back 15 years ago. So a lot of us, we were intimately involved in that. We knew what was going. We're going, oh, we understand the very government we're up against, because this was now has its own reminiscence of a false flag operation and 2 years to the day on April 19th of Waco. So this is, it really caught our attention then. But go ahead and finish whatever thought you had from the last segment. But then I wanted to get into how you got involved in that issue and where we're at on that.
Well, one thing I would say, and to close off, I've found it. I think I've said I'm a avid collector of government documents. And so where I get my information from, and this is the way I like it, it's straight from the source. I'm one of those weirdos that'll read entire court cases and hundreds of pages of government documents. One of them about threw me out of my chair, and if people, they can probably do a Google search, or they can just go to Scribd, S-C-R-B-D, Scribd.com, and I'm on their Axiom with two X's. But look up a document that I, an article that I wrote called Envisioning the Future of the CODIS DNA Database. Envisioning the Future of the CODIS DNA Database. Do you like what you see, America? And it'll give you an idea of just what they're doing and where they're going. And if that doesn't chill you into waking up and, you know, seeing data for what it is and how dangerous it can be, this is your property, your body. The thing about the private property that I was talking about earlier, I knew that we're talking about private property. Well, I know my private property is my body, and I was already angry of all the laws and rules and regulations that were being directed at what I did with my most personal private property, and that's my body. But look up that document, Envisioning the Future of the CODIS DNA Database. And
I'm looking at it right now.
It's I'm redoing it right now, but you read the words of this fella. He is the DNA database guru from Colorado, and he lays it out for you what they're going to do with it. And you, I mean, to me, that's one of the most chilling documents that I found. There is another one called California Vision 2015. That's a real winner too. I took that one to Missouri when I testified at the MIAC hearings, and they didn't want to hear anything about it. Public-private partnerships are a big problem here too. You know, what used to keep the government from gaining too much control, what used to keep us somewhat in balance, is that we didn't have the manpower to physically surveil people to the degree that they needed. Surveillance is a huge part of control. And now with the technology that they have, that has eliminated that problem of the manpower. And so we're in a unique situation after 9/11 with all the fear that's drummed up and the technology and part of the new paradigm of our government, you know, transforming government, is that public and private partnerships as a matter of course. And there's just some arenas that's not appropriate. But
you know, this is one thing. I want to discuss this private partnership, whatever thing you want to call it. I can't think of one that's turned out to be good, you know. And what it does is it gives them, you know, just another layer of defense or freedom that they can do things that they normally can't. They just, it's bad in a lot of ways. But the main thing that I focus on is they can't do any of this stuff unless you give them the ability to extract the money from you to fund it anyway. These organizations, these Blackwaters, this private security, these privatizing of prisons, the privatizing of fill in the blank of all kinds of stuff. I can go on and on and on about it. If they didn't have the ability to take the money from us to fund it, they wouldn't do it. And if we wanted it, we would subscribe to it. We would ask for it. We get our own security. I mean, heck, even fire protection was a subscribe to thing. Heck, even here in Arizona, it's called Rural Metro. So I'm really starting to get holistic in all of my approaches to this. It's always follow the money. There's somebody, of course they have these iris scanners. Of course they got the full body scanners at the airport. Of course they got all these different kinds of, you know, cherry picking instant roadblock go up guy in their little guard shack pulled on a trailer behind a Suburban instant roadblock on the highway kind of thing. Of course they do. Because somebody's making money providing this service. They will create a need to provide the service. You want to know who's on the board of all these different places? All these fear in pharmaceutical going to protect us from disease, day law, whatever. It's like in V for Vendetta. All the bad guys in government are making the money in these corporations. We got, what was it, Chertoff, that used to be Homeland Security. He's a lobbyist for the guy doing the full body scanner. So I'm just going, you know, it's not hard to see how they're able to do this. It is with the money that they're taking from us. It's just a big, giant bank robbery. So I'm going, you know, if we take away their ability to take money from us or to go into debt in my grandchildren's name, I don't know, a whole bunch of this stuff just goes away. In my opinion. Well, go ahead, and I got that up. If you go to freedomsphoenix.com, and you'll see today's show for September 13th, Declare Your Independence, we have the show. You click in there, and it has a link to all the stuff that we've been talking about today, to Kay Beach's. I just put up your future of the CODIS DNA database. Got that up there. Boom, click, boom, boom, done. While you're talking, did it. That's one thing I love about Freeman's Phoenix is they're available. Now, I want to go ahead and segue over into Oklahoma City, because when we were in Pennsylvania, we had Representative Charles Key, and I told my producer, just remind me, I said, go ahead and let's get him on this week or next, or as soon as we can get him on. And because he was a legislator, I remember we had him on the show before, and we had been, you know, passing around information and email back in the day. And then he had lost, they didn't want him in the legislature anymore. And now, he's back in, you know, causing problems again for the man. So I'm like, cool. Well, this Oklahoma City thing, when we had this weekend being September 11th, I took the opportunity with some of your writings and some other stuff that people had put up, and I wanted to, there's enough 9/11 stuff up there, and I go, you know, I think people, they don't know, like my daughter, she's 20 years old, had no idea Oklahoma City, it was like our 9/11. You know, the same kind of stuff was going, the same cover up, the same multiple detonation bombs stuff, the live coverage, television, the bomb squads are there getting the other bomb, to all this stuff talked about. Nobody, if they even know that Oklahoma City existed, they don't know of the cover-up that was surrounding it then. So I put all that information up to let people go, look, man, we've been through this before. When I was a young man, you know, we already went through this. You know, after Waco and after Ruby Ridge and after we had Oklahoma City, and then here came all the terrorist legislation and the crime bills and the midnight basketball and blah, blah, blah. All this new surveillance state increasing back then. 9/11 was just all the stuff they didn't get passed. It became the Patriot Act, and they just pulled it off the shelf and passed it just like they did the Obamacare. Well, you know, what did Nancy Pelosi say? We got to pass it so we can know what it says, you know, and we've been through this before. So in the final segment, when we come back, Kay Beach is going to give us an update, because there's a little secret. There's a documentary coming out. Oh, might it have some goody good in there? I think so. And Kay Beach is going to tell us all about it when we come back on Declare Your Independence in just a little bit.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
What used to be the American way, where the heck that was. We're working on it. We just want to understand it. That's what we're trying to do. You know, I can advocate for, I don't know, something better. I want better. And what might that be? Well, a better is none of the bad guys with a gun at my forehead taking my stuff. I vote that one. That's a good one to start off with. So, you know, we'll go ahead and emphasize whatever's going on in the news and try and get to there someday. The next generation is going to learn something from a lot of the experiences of us that have been around for a while. It doesn't take very long. Think about it. These young guys, you know, they're in junior high or something, or elementary when 9/11 happens, and then they start to see the progression. They do a little research. They, you know, talk to each other on Facebook and vet their own ideas and what somebody said, and goes back and forth and back and forth. And then, of course, you got the infiltrating bloggers from the Pentagon and the Obama administration trying to salt the wound out there, you know, saying, oh, yeah, we're, you know, yeah, that's bad. You shouldn't be thinking that. You don't know what you're talking about. And after a while, it just gets where they're so obvious that the people can just learn on their own. And one of those things was Oklahoma City. It was recent enough, and the internet was around, emails and archive footage and stuff, enough that it's starting to make its way up there with a documentary that's being done that Kay Beach is going to tell us about. Tell us about this documentary, will you, Kay?
Well, first of all, this documentary is being done by an organization or a group called the Free Minds Film. Free Mind Films, and you can find them at freemindfilms.com. And
okay, Free Minds, no, what? Free Minds,
free,
what?
Free Mind Films.
Don't. Oh, films. Free Minds Films. Okay,
and,
got it.
And a little bit of background. I was in Oklahoma when the Murrah Building was bombed. I was 26 years old. I had an 8-month-old baby, and I was about 15 miles from the blast. My husband at the time worked for ODOT, Department of Transportation, and he could have very easily been up there. But like everyone in the state, and I found all over the country, this was a situation or a tragedy that happened that aside from a tragedy that's happened to me personally, I went through the same grieving process, and I found that to be common. But I didn't keep up with it heavily, you know, in the years after. But there were a couple of cases that caught my interest, and one of those was Jesse Trinity. His brother Kenneth was brutally murdered at the Oklahoma Federal Transfer Center, apparently in a case of mistaken identity, something to do with the Midwest Bombers, a guy named Richard Lee Guthrie, who also was found strangely hanging in his cell. But what got me about Trinity's case, Jesse, number one, he's just a hero. I always picture him as a little Viking. He has been working on this for years. He didn't start off to have anything to do with Oklahoma City bombing. You just want to know who killed his brother. Well, I had a brother that was murdered, and maybe that's why it got my attention, but I always followed his case, and he has filed case after case, freedom of information. Over the years, we had a local station that would have him on about twice a month and was the only one brave enough to have him on. He was intimidated by the federal government. They tried to indict him a couple times to get him to stop, but he wouldn't stop, and he still hasn't stopped. And so I kind of came at the Oklahoma City bombing sort of sideways. In fact, when I got politically active, I decided my role was to be a coalition builder. So you pick the issues that you can bring people together on. And the Oklahoma City bombing was not really one of those, as you can see with what happened to Charles Key. And, you know, the funny thing is, the media will still try once in a while, although they backed off of it, in the black helicopter and all this stuff. And the people in Oklahoma know. They know that this is just not right. But I met Charles Key when I was going up to the Capitol, and he's a one in a million. He's the real deal. He's a real guy, and he's a real good guy. And I was doing real ID events and things like that, and I would always run into a fellow named Chris Emery, who had a radio show called Radio Free Oklahoma. And he had been working on this documentary for years. So this documentary has been years in the making. And it seemed like everywhere I turned, I'd run into people that I trusted, were intelligent, that were good people, that were saying this is not right. And I tried to be supportive of them and stay off of that issue because it's not a good coalition building issue. But you know what? I guess sometimes you don't get to choose. Anyways, we have some new guys on the scene. One of these guys is James Lane, and he's an activist, Ron Paul guy, and a real go-getter. And so he's whipping up all of this research that's been done, and let's do this film. And he's kind of taken the ball and run with it. We've got Holland Bender Nguyenhoff, who was co-host on Radio Free Oklahoma, has also been involved and a great researcher himself. So they gave me a little part to research. And I thought, good, because I can research this. It's about the legislation that came out of Oklahoma City and the genesis of that and how it led, how it got expounded on with 9/11 and also the Southern Poverty Law Center's involvement in the whole situation. And I don't think you can poke around the Oklahoma City bombing without getting to that central question that everybody has. And that is, why were these things not followed up on? You know, the investigation was not complete. So a lot of my research has to do with laws and the climate, the political climate, excuse me, and the way that this Oklahoma City bombing still is being used to demonize people today. And I got into Jesse Trinity. I don't know if you remember, not too many months ago, he got another batch of documents that proved what people had been saying all along, that there was foreign involvement. The CIA was involved. Now, they released these documents under something called the Vaughn Index, which means they don't release the documents, but apparently they just describe them. And the judge in that case in Colorado did Jesse Trinity a big favor. And without telling what was in the documents, he described them, and he let them know that there was foreign involvement and the CIA was involved. So there's been loads of information that's come out in the past several years, tons of information, and this information needs to be documented.
Well, that was part of the information. You know, we've interviewed what's the brother's name? There's Ken, and Jesse's the brother, right? The attorney. And his brother, Kenneth, was arrested for some reason and beaten to death. And his brother, because they thought he might have been one of the suspects or something, had nothing to do with nothing. They just beat him to death. And he's like, oh, no. We're going to, I'm going to put the information up on today's show. Boom, push the button. There it is. And what happened was, we had been following this story. He just wanted to know the truth. Well, the revelation in this court case, or them admitting that, yeah, the CIA was involved, is that was their justification that they use. Oh, national security, you know, nothing to see. You're not allowed to look and whatever because the CIA was involved. And we go, that was kind of the point. The CIA was involved, you buttheads. You know what I mean? So, this is, I don't know how it benefited them by saying you can't look at this stuff. We're going to redact all this stuff because, you know, the intelligence community was involved. You know,
well, and before that, before the CIA steps through, that's just the latest revelation. Before that, I've got a stack of 150 302 FBI documents here. And what they showed, and this is how Jesse got some of that stuff released, because someone leaked him a document from the FBI that showed that Louis Spree was talking to the Southern Poverty Law Center because they had an informant or informants at Elohim City when the bombing occurred and before. And this is the part that's blowing my mind. I mean, I guess we've had the Meet the Patriots thing that names a lot of people that I actually know personally that are not haters or freaks or anything dangerous at all. In fact, I wish we had more like them, like Amanda Teagarden with OK Say. There's the woman is, you can't touch her. There's nothing bad about her. Definitely nothing hateful or illegal. Gary Franchi, for example. And so they were
Ron
on my
Paul.
Radar, and I thought, what is wrong with these people?
Well, Ron Paul, Sheriff Mack, Gary Franchi.
Yes.
They go on, you know, I've had, Heidi Byrick, she's the director of special projects at Southern Poverty Law Center, has been on the show probably four times. And I just make fun of her all the time going, how come I'm not on there? I can't make the list. What the heck? And we're not going to put you on, Ernie, because we know you want to be on.
Well, weren't you defending the Viper militia at some point?
No,
well,
she
you're
was doing...
on their list. Don't you doubt it.
Oh, yeah. No, what happened was she goes, well, we don't put libertarians on the list and all this other stuff. But what happened was during the Viper militia thing, that Janet Napolitano was the prosecuting attorney in the late 90s here on that. We did a thing called Viper Reserve, and we took, because the internet was just getting started where you could really start doing, build really good web pages with PDFs and have access to documents that you could just click on and the media could get. And we took all of this information and we put it on a website. I go, you really want to know what's going on? Here it is. And I alluded to it when I did a CNN interview with Rick Sanchez on the, the black man takes an AR-15, Obama came here to Arizona thing. And I'm going, look, we know what's coming. They did it before. It was Janet Napolitano that did it here in Arizona, and we're going to preempt them doing it again. We know how they operate. Well, what did they do? They didn't go to Arizona, even after Heidi Byrick and them are here. Oh, we got racism and white supremacists and militia and all that stuff in Arizona rising up again. They went and did the Huttery militia thing in Michigan. Mm-hmm. So we dodged that bullet. So I'm going, you know, this has been going on and on and on. I'm sorry we ran out of time. You know, can you stay one more segment, Kay?
Sure.
Let's go ahead and do that. Let's go ahead and stay through the news break at the top of the hour, because I want to talk more about the documentary and when it's coming out and little details about that. We'll get all those details when we come back here on Declare Your Independence. And me, Ernest Hancock, and my special guest, Kay Beach. Kay Beach is now a writer for Freedom's Phoenix. You see a lot of the good stuff and all the information that he had and the research that she has. And I go, no, we got it. We got to get that up. I set her up and said, go, right. Give me all the goodies. Because we need the history to go to this next generation of freedom fighters that don't have this, don't know it exists, didn't know that we've already been through this. We know how bad the bad guys are. They're really, 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 really bad. We'll be right back.